Hello, and welcome to the Divorce Woman's Guide podcast, where we talk about the things us divorcees are thinking, but not always talking about, as we turn our divorce into the best gift you've ever been given. And I do so with a little bit of sass and a whole lot of class. I am your host, Wendy Sterling, founder of The Divorce Rehab. I am here to support you in this transition phase of your life so you can start your new, best chapter on your own terms. After all, that's what I did after my own divorce. And now it is my mission to change the conversation around divorce and help you see why your divorce, like mine, was the best gift you ever received. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Divorced Woman's Guide podcast. I am so excited that you have tuned in today because I am here with Karen Stanley. Hello, Karen. How are you?
Hello, Wendy. I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm fabulous. And I'm so excited that you're here today because we are going to dive into a really awesome conversation all about, have you addressed the common denominator in all of your relationships? I wonder, have you? Well, Karen is going to lift open that box lid and share what that common denominator actually is. But before we dive in, I'm going to share a little bit more about Karen with you all. As Amazon's number one new release author and frequent self-improvement podcast guest, Karen Stanley describes herself as follows. And she says, I should have you read this, Karen. Hi, I'm Karen. I'm not a doctor or a psychologist. I was a single mom for 1,000 years. Okay, 8. And I finally experienced real love after dealing with abuse, going through divorce, facing bankruptcy, foreclosure, and repossession of my car, all while raising 2 kids alone. After struggling with self-worth and attracting the wrong partner time and time again, I realized if you want to manifest the life you've always wanted, you must become the person you've always wanted to be. I just got goosebumps. Whew. I believe no matter what hell we've gone through, we can experience lasting love starting with ourselves. Like full body goosebumps there, Karen, I have to tell you, which is super powerful. And you are a powerhouse in and of yourself. And I'm so grateful that our paths crossed and that we found each other because you do have a really incredible, relatable story. And the first question that I really would love for you to answer is, how does your story impact the work you do today?
It changed everything. I never knew I would do this work, actually. I was on a quest to attract the right partner this time. I wanted to change my beliefs about marriages and relationships and myself, and was so tired of attracting the same type of relationship with a different name over and over and over. And there's so many similarities. What is going on here? And that's why, you know, I finally took a look in the mirror and said, okay, what am I doing to keep attracting the same things over and over again? And then when I set out on this quest and I really did a lot of work towards how do I change those beliefs? First of all, how do I create the beliefs that it is possible and that I do deserve love from a person who cherishes me and loves me and trusts me? How do I do that though? And I work daily steps every single day towards that. And then the same person I knew the entire time, he was in front of me the entire time. I walked in the door and he looked at me like I was a different person. And that's because I was a different person. And finally attracted the relationship that I had written about, I had journaled about, I had dreamed about, it had been planted into my heart, into my dreams since I was a young girl. And these are the tools that helped me create that relationship and that life I wanted. I never thought I was going to write a book. I never thought I would be doing this work at all. That was never the intention or a thought. Until a couple of years ago when we were hiking. And I said, John, it seems to me like you didn't do anything. that first day that I walked into the dealership and he saw me differently, we sat down and talked for an hour. He was one of my clients. I did his marketing, which is hilarious. Usually not a good idea, girls. You know, he said that he was at a, you know, had a beautiful Thanksgiving with his friends, longtime friends. They've been married 30 years, the kids, grandkids, you know, generations, and all the love, everybody's coming together. And he said, up until that day, he had not been looking for a wife, certainly not a wife. He never thought he would want to get married again, but also not even looking for love. He was just looking for someone to do things with, right. You know, he was happy to be free of his first, of his marriage, but he was lonely. He worked a lot, didn't have a whole lot of time, but then that day, and he's telling me this, he's my client. It's in the middle of the busiest day of the whole year. He runs a huge Toyota store, and I'm sitting there at one of the tables in this, probably 250 people around. Right. And he said, but that day I got into my truck and I said, God, I'm ready to fall in love. And I'm like, well, you should, John, you're amazing. You should have love. Everybody should have a great wife, a love partner. Everybody deserves that. I want that for everybody. And he was like, well, you did. He thought I had a boyfriend. He thought I was dating somebody. I said, no, I didn't. And he was like, oh, well, what happened? I said, we broke up. He was, you know, way too young for me. I don't know if you ever dated any of significantly younger. That's the only time I had done that. Yeah. It didn't work out. Oh. And he goes, well, how old was he? He's like 32-ish. And I'm almost 40 at this point. Oh, wow. Okay. So what is your age range? Because John's slightly older than me. So he's thinking, well, what is your age range?
Right. And he goes, do I fit into that age range?
I've always been attracted to people older than me. All of my closest confidants and all of my best friends are like the other decade, a decade ahead of me, because they know more. No, they're wiser than I am. I want to learn. I want to be like, take their last 10 years and learn from them. So when I'm hiking two years ago, and I was saying, from my perspective, you didn't do any work. And I worked on myself for a year and a half straight. I was like, you know, keeping my focus on the person I wanted to become, because I just knew that's how I was going to attract you. And he goes, and I'm like, I just think it's a strategy. And he goes, you should write a book. You're right. Totally right. And so what's so amazing is that, you know, this whole time, this whole experience was preparing me to write it and share it. And like I said, I'm not an expert. I'm not an authority in anything. I just had this experience helped me accomplish this, you know, get away from self-loathing and lack of communication skills and doubt and, you know, self-hatred, and come to a place where I could change those beliefs and then attract the relationship that I really wanted. And it's been an incredible, you know, journey so far, and extremely rewarding. And I get to be with you today talking to your listeners. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I love your story. And, you know, when we first connected, we were chit-chatting and trying to figure out what we wanted to talk about today. You said something really powerful. And I was like, that's what we're going to talk about, because it's such a good topic and one that we know, but we don't really put enough emphasis on, I believe. So that has to do with today's episode, obviously, what our topic is. So we're going to, you know, take the lid off of what I said before, which is, what is the one thing that all relationships have in common, Karen?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you need like a drum roll or like something, right?
Everyone has their ideas of what it is. It's the one thing everything has in common. All of your relationships have in common, you know, and before, my story was a bunch of jerks, liars. That's what they all have in common, right? So I was always focused on the other person, what they were doing wrong, what I wish they would do differently. And then I just realized, oh man, it's me. I am the common denominator. So what is it that I can do and take control and take responsibility? What is my role? My role in every single one of those relationships and every single one of those bad dates, quote unquote, bad dates, which I don't call them anymore. And I realized that actually there's a lesson in every single one of them. And I think every single person is put in our life to teach us something. If we really pay attention, if we really focus on that, then we can keep from making the same mistake with the next guy, or having the same situation with the next person, and then keep, you know, just moving forward in that direction where you're not the same person.
Right.
So the next person that you meet, you are not the same. Right. you have learned something. You have learned, you know, what you want, what you don't want. And like we were talking about, we learned how to communicate better, and take more power into the things that we really, truly want and to create and want in our lives and deserve. We have to believe that we deserve it. And then we can create that. And so we're not moving forward the same person, like having the next 10 years. What's that saying where you have either you have 10 years of experience or you have 1 year of experience 10 times?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I wanted to enjoy, to avoid, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's why the divorce rate for second marriages is so high, is because when you don't take a beat and do the work on yourself, exactly what you said, you just keep attracting the same type of person. So why is it, aside from that, why is it so important to do work on yourself, to really take the time and take responsibility?
One of the biggest things that I noticed is that as I was progressing, as I was working towards, I had made some small quantifiable goals in key areas that were important to me. And I had worked towards slowly transforming the beliefs that I had and held on to, even from a very young girl. You mentioned abuse before. The abuse wasn't in my marriage. I was sexually abused when I was a small child. So as a four-year-old girl, as you know, that's where you create your core beliefs in your DNA. It's not from what happened. It's just what you believe around what happened, right? So taking that time, if you go the rest of your, I already gone, 38 years, believing that men only wanted me for sex and they didn't want my friendship or, companionship or, love. I was just a means to an end. I didn't want to go another 38 years believing that, because I kept attracting people that really did not want to give me their time and their love and attention. They weren't actually interested, except for what I made them feel and how I made them look to their parents, and all of those things. And so if I already knew what that was like, so holding on to those beliefs, and then I had to identify what other beliefs did I hold on to. So based on your next experiences, your next 10 years of marriage, having two children, your marriage dissolving and that breakup and that heartache, what did I now create? What new beliefs am I creating about that, about relationships? Marriage is a drag. It keeps me from doing what I want to do. Being single is freedom. I don't need a man. I'm a single mom. I'm going to be a solo warrior and I can do everything myself. And so I knew that I could hold on to those beliefs and then my life would be relatively the same. And I just knew it was going to be the same.
Right.
And what I really wanted is to attract someone who loved me and cherished me and trusted me and respected me. And I knew that, well, how do I get that? I got to respect myself. How do I trust myself? How do I love myself? What do I really need to do to believe that what I really want is possible?
Yeah.
And that's why the work is so important, because your beliefs determine everything. But Henry Ford, 100 years ago, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. It is so powerful to me, and how we apply that to other areas in our life. We've probably read some books about, you're a businesswoman, you've read business books and success books and things that other goals, how important goals are, right, to fulfillment and joy. And these principles are rarely talked about in the form of, how about we just apply those to a relationship goal?
Right.
And if you believe that you can create your own business, then you will, and everything will be fine. And if you really want to create your own business, but you don't believe it's possible for you because you don't have this, you don't have the education, you don't have the money, the relationships, the education, the schooling, you have all these beliefs, right? Well, what are the chances of that one person creating their own business? It's zero.
Yeah.
And so I knew those principles and I said, okay, what do I need to do to change those beliefs? I know they're false. So let's find physical manifestations in the real world, in my real world, that prove whatever that is that I believe is false. Let's start there. you know, and really focus on those, you know, those, that's not true, because it's not true that all men want me for sex, because I've got about 1,000 gay friends and they wouldn't want to touch me with a 10-foot pole.
Exactly. Right?
And systematically breaking those down and then systematically proving them wrong, reinforcing the new belief. And, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a slow, tedious process. And they still creep in. I don't know about you, but
of course,
these limiting beliefs, they creep in all the time. They're like, whoa, where did that come from?
Of course. Well, it's funny. Last night, I've got one of my colleagues one of my team members is here, and we were brainstorming some ideas of like new content that, you know, we can talk about. And like, one of the things that came up when we were talking was exactly that, is that it's not like you're cured for the rest of your life. It's not like you take a magic pill and all of a sudden everything goes away. Nothing affects you anymore. It is an ongoing practice to do this type of work. Self-improvement, it's never over. You're not, you know, I hear so many clients, oh, I'm good now. Really? You're good now? Because I'm not good now. And I've been doing this for 5 years and I've got a great toolkit, and I still have situations where things creep in, but I have the tools to know how to do it, right? So the difference is that, number one, it is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And the second thing that you said is, you know, you've got to do the work to get the tools so that when it does come up, because it will for the rest of your life, especially if you have kids, it may not be as frequent when they're younger, but you will always have something at some point in time. So there are a lot of benefits to the self-improvement game. So talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I'll give you an example. The other day, I realized that one of my old limiting beliefs was I was raised in a very fundamentalist Christian home. And I'm one of the very few women in my family. There's 11 kids, just by the way.
Wow.
I'm number six, 5 older, 5 younger. My mom is a saint.
Wow.
Or crazy, or both. I don't know how she did it.
She's insane.
I love her. She just turned 80, and we all flew to Salt Lake City last week to surprise her. We didn't tell her we were coming. We're all lying to her. 11 kids Aww. Lied to their mother so we could surprise her on her birthday. 80 years Aww. Old. Yeah, it was really special. However, how I was trained, and it's not like anybody directly told me this or taught me this in some lesson book. I was just trained from an early age that moms stay home. Stay-at-home moms is the best moms. You can't be a good mom if you're working. And that's just what we did. That's what everybody did. That's what my mom did. My dad was the breadwinner. That's just what you do. And I really struggle with that. And then as soon as, you know, even, you know, advancing my career when I was married, it was a lot of, how do you say this? My family was very concerned. Let's put it that way. Expressed concern for their working mother sister. And then when I got a divorce, they all backed off. Not all, it wasn't a big deal. I'm just saying, you know, that pressure was released because I didn't have a choice at that point. And there was no longer any pressure or any kind of any problem. Or so fast forward, it's my daughter's 15 years old, and I still wrestle with I'm not as good of a mom as I could be, because I have a career, because of this, because of X, Y, Z, all these limiting beliefs. And during COVID, you know, she was still going back and forth for her dad's house or her mom's house and to my house. And I was always asking her if she wanted to go for a walk with me. You know, do you want to come, you know, outside? We're going for a walk. Do you want to go ride bikes? Do you want to go, you know? And she always turns me down, always turns me down. So she comes back from her dad's house. Hey, mom, guess what? I went on a walk with dad every single night when I was over there.
Ouch. You're like, but what about me? I know you're like, oh, gut punch.
Wow. Okay. That my limiting belief is popping up. That doesn't mean anything. That right. means she's, you know, in that stage where she wants to please her dad, and she wants to do that with her dad. And mom's always here. I'm always the one nagging her. I'm always the one that's right. you know, wants to do stuff. And it was a beautiful reminder, because it hurt, then I go, wait, stop. That's a limiting belief. And that's not true. And let's just replay a few things so I can prove to myself that I'm not a terrible mother. And, you know, we had game night last night. We had a family dinner the night before. You know, it's like, we do spend time together. Everything's okay. And then we can move forward.
Right.
Because those things, they never go away. And so it's a beautiful thing when you, like you said, tools. I need my tools. I need my toolkit everywhere I go every day, especially with teenagers.
Yeah.
And then once you get married in a happily loving, you know, amazing to an incredible person, we're both flawed. Both have trauma. He has major trauma from his childhood that he's hardly talked about to anybody. Right. And until we got together. And so it's just an evolution that's beautiful. It's a little painful, of course.
Sure.
And pain is, you know, growth is painful sometimes, unfortunately.
It is.
I wish we could just take a pill and be done with it. My gosh.
I know. I always say, like, we're always in transformation. There's always new different ways that we get to improve. You know, we are human. We are flawed. Every single one of us, we don't get it right every time. I sure as hell don't get it right every time, but there's opportunities to grow from them. And there's also teaching opportunities for our children. And with the example that you gave, like, I'm so grateful that you transparently shared that, because I'm sure so many people listening can relate to what you just said. And it's interesting because I sometimes have the same experiences too, where I'm just like, wait a second. And we have a dog. I'm like, I asked you to go walk the dog with me and you said no, but then you tell me how you went with dad to go walk the dog at dad's house. And why don't you do what you think it's about you? And, you know, and it has nothing to do with you, because they like to do different things, you know, with each parent. And I talked about this recently, actually, in my Facebook group, where I was saying how, like, one of the reasons why I believe our self-esteem and our confidence take such a hit is because we're on autopilot of playing the comparison game. So the limiting belief, right, goes back to somewhat of a comparison with our former spouse. Well, why them and not me? And again, that's what impacts self-esteem. That's when you start, you know, the negative self-talk starts coming in, unworthiness, et cetera. So, like, it's not a competition, and you have to make sure that you have the language to be able to recognize when that voice is creeping in and to learn how to combat it, right? Because our self-worth is so tied to our limiting belief story. So what habits have worked for you that help with increasing your self-worth?
Oh, the journaling. So I think the journaling was the number one thing. If I had to start with number one, mm-hmm. to identify first, have that awareness, right? Everybody says to learn anything, you have to be aware of what you need to learn, right? So you have to have the awareness of, I would like to, you know, feel more self-love and self-worth and self-confident. And, have a reason why. I think that really is a huge part of people's success when they want to make a change and they want to create growth and have something, have a why. I really wanted to show my children what a loving, healthy relationship looks like.
Yeah.
That was, obviously I wanted love and I wanted to be in a partnership, and mom needs love and support and that's okay too. But the bigger picture, I really wanted to be an example, not just, I always used to, one of my limiting beliefs would just be like, I'll just date somebody when they go to college. I mean, how am I going to even deal with all this? And who's going to want to sign up for this?
Right.
John married me when my kid, or we got together when they were 9 and 11. And I was barely halfway through, right? And he'd already raised his kids. So his kids were a senior high school, and then his son had already gone to college. He's done. And he signed up for this shit show anyway. I mean, he's a saint. He's a true saint.
Right.
And those negative beliefs. And I just thought, well, what, you know, like I said, what do I need to do to change those? And so I wrote everything that I believe right now, and then the physical manifestations that they are not true. How can you disprove them right now? And you can find, if you really search and you really think about it, two, three things that disprove those, That means they're false. Okay, now look for the opposite in your life. Instead of every single time I'm a bad mom and Leah never wants to do anything for me. Well, you can keep saying that and focusing on that and then keep creating that over and over and over. And I bet she'll do nothing with you for the next month. And then, oh, add on to that, you know, she likes her dad better than me. She wants to spend time with her father. Dad's always been more important, right? You could just keep going on and on and on, spiral down into a deep depression. And you could also say, I'm doing the best I can. I'm going to schedule a family night. I'm going to see if she wants to play cards. I'm going to see if she wants to watch a movie. Let's schedule lunch on Saturday. Like, focus on what is disproving that limiting belief and write it down and then plan on it. I really strongly feel passionate about writing down the goal, small quantifiable goals, because everyone's like, gosh, you're kind of goal driven. You know, you're really goal related. Goals this, goals that. I'm like, well, here's why. Because I wanted to make sure that I have strong relationships with my kids. Well, what does that mean? Okay, well, we all want that, but children are different. Yeah, what, define it, be it quantifiable. Like, what exactly does that mean? Okay, you can't quantify, I want to be a good mom.
Right.
And we all want to, and what I found helps me the most is that, okay, so at the end of the day, what would it mean? What would it take for me to say, you know what, Karen, you did a good job. Wasn't perfect, but you did a good job. What would you need to do? What's the most important thing to you? And at that time, when I was writing this list, I said, reading at the end of the day. And it was very special. You know, we all gathered in mom's bed and one on either side, and they were, you know, young, six and eight. It was the best time of my whole life. You know, those moments where they're each kid, one snuggled on this arm, the one, and we got the book in the middle. But if I didn't plan for it, then I wouldn't get bed and baths and toothbrushing done fast enough. And then I was tired, and I don't do well. I'm not a night owl like some people. I'm up early no matter what. And I can't keep my eyes open past 9 o'clock at night. So if I didn't start early enough and I'm opening that book at 8:50, then I am denying us of the most important time. So when I make a small quantifiable goal to read for an hour, which means move bath time up to 7:30, then boom, guess what happens? We read for the entire hour. We get all of that quantity time and the quality time. And I feel fulfilled because I know I did something that was important to me. Everyone else is different, whether it's soccer practice or softball or whatever it is. Right. And really honing in on that, because we're all so unique and my kids are totally opposites. So I needed to make small quantifiable. Oh my gosh. Are they?
Polar opposites.
Oh my gosh. In every way.
Yes.
And so I have to make it specific to, okay, what does Brandon need, you know, and make one a weekly goal or whatever it is. And what does, you know, Leah need a weekly goal? And we get so, like you said, comparison will literally kill you. It'll steal every ounce of joy in your life. And if you can take that focus back to what worked for me is taking that focus. Okay. What is really important here? Yeah. Forget about everything else. Forget about PTA meetings and, you know, homemade cookies and having everybody's hair perfectly brushed and socks matching. I suck at all that anyway. You know, we're never late. We're never on time. Leah wouldn't let me touch her hair. She looked like she was homeless every single day. I just had to let it go.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. What matters is that, you know, I, you know, go see her for lunch, you know, once a month, and we read, and then I pick her up. I'm at home when she gets home off the bus. For a while, she rode the bus. That's what matters. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And so when there's a complete disaster happening and, you know, Brandon punches a hole in my wall and we didn't eat dinner, you know, we had Cheerios for dinner. It doesn't matter, because if I read, if I hit that one goal, then I feel like I did okay. I'm doing a good job. I can put my head down. Bed. All right. We can improve tomorrow. Right. But I always say
like our best looks different every day. Right. Oh, so your best.
Love that.
Right. Today, like you got everybody in bed to read an hour before. Tomorrow, you may win on the, you know, instead of Cheerios, I made pasta, right? And then we missed the reading by like 15 minutes. But, you know, so it's like our best looks different every day. And one of the things that I love that you said, it's really about reconnecting back to, and I know you've said this before, it's like reconnecting to what your why is, like why we make the choices that we do, why we show up to be the person that we are, the mom that or dad that we get to be, and getting really clear on that. Because to me, what that says is like, you know what your values are, so you're living your life in accordance with your values.
I love that. And what's really funny is that when I at the same time, I was also focused on the type and really keeping a record of who I wanted to attract and what qualities he had and what characteristics he had. And when I was explaining this to someone the other day, they said, oh, you are lining out your values. That's your values. And I went, I never thought of it that way. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. What I wanted him to be is kind. I wanted him to be patient with my father because my dad tells us the same stories over and over and over again.
So does mine.
But I wanted a husband who would stand there and listen and smile and love him anyway. And guess right. what? That means I had to. So I want someone who's patient. What can I do that requires patience and do it? The only way you can get better at patience is to put yourself in the situations that require it.
Exactly.
It's the only way. Right. And so, cause I had a list of a soulmate list, you know, on a piece of paper a long time. And I had written it a long time ago. It was in the drawer by my bedside. But I didn't, at that point, I didn't believe that it was true. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. There's no way a guy like this exists. There's no way. It's not possible. That's stupid. Why do I even do this?
Yeah.
But then as I said, on creating my own self-worth and belief, and as the belief muscles grew, then and as I was doing, having new experiences and I was adding and editing, having it in my phone, made it a living, breathing document in front of my face every single second.
Right.
And that really helped me believe that it was possible. And then as I experienced something, I went, oh, I really like that. Let's add that. Or, oh, I read something that doesn't really resonate with me at all. That's not important. Let's take that off.
Right.
And so you're kind of learning as you go and you realize that you're changing, and then that's really your list. That's the list for you. What do you need to do to become that person? And that helped me again, keep that focus instead of on, there's so many things that we could waste our attention on, so many things we could waste all of our energy on, you know, talking about the past or, you know, talking about the flaws of other people or what you like and don't like, or what you don't like about someone else or what you wish were different, wish had gone differently. It takes the same amount of energy to focus on what you want and then focus on really how you want to be, how you want to show up. And then for me, it was about an 17 months process from that one day where I decided that I went to my best friend's wedding. I was her maid of honor. And that's really was the tipping point. And I said, you know what? What does she have that I don't have? And because I was sitting there in front, it wasn't just her, it was her, you know, her husband's parents. They had been married 47 years, and he stood up and gave the toast and he said, You think you love her now, just wait 47 years from now. And you'll love her more than you can ever imagine in your entire life. And I was like, seriously? That's real? Someone actually says that 50 years later?
Right.
You had wrinkles and saggy boobs and gray hair. I'm like, wow, he means it too.
Yeah.
He will cut his son off. And he's like, well, son, I got to go. There's an angel walking down the stairs. That's what he says about his wife 50 years later. And to me, that's the most beautiful thing and the most precious thing. And that I want that. And so I got to feed John a lot of vitamins. So I want him to stay alive for a long time. I don't know if we'll get to 50.
But what I think is beautiful about what you just said, and, you know, to kind of bring it full circle, is really like, you create what you think, you manifest what it is that you say that you want. It's about really getting clear on exactly what that looks like. Not using generic words, but getting really specific. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're the one who's in control. You get to make the decisions, you get to call the shots, and whatever you declare is what the universe is going to hand you. So time to get crystal clear on what it is that you want, because at the end of the day, you know, it's up to you.
Yep. And be careful what you wish for. My husband is an adopted only child. He married me. There are 47 grandkids in my family. There's literally 80 people in my immediate family.
Oh my God. You were the biggest. I didn't even know this about family. You.
He said he always wanted a big family. I'm like, well, there you go. Be careful what you wish for.
You got it. Oh my God. I love that.
Poor guy.
Or lucky guy, right?
He loves it now. I know it is kind of overwhelming at first, but he said this last trip's been, you know, we just had our fifth anniversary, and he said, oh, I finally feel like part of the family. I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad, honey, because you always have been.
Right.
That's a lot. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people to have to like get to know and get close to. So,
yeah. Oh, that's awesome. We see each other once a year, once every other year. You know, I mean, we all live all over the country. So, yeah, it's a really amazing thing.
I love it. Oh, my goodness, Karen. I loved our conversation today. Is there anything else that you want to leave our audience with before we say goodbye?
If your listeners out there have any trouble believing that what it is that you really want to create isn't possible, I would just urge you to do that. Do some journaling and just start there. Say, you know, you've learned a lot, and you've learned the universe is showing you what really resonates with you in your heart. And every person's different. Every relationship's different. Your relationship doesn't have to look like mine. I mean, you could, you know, want to be in the country, or, you know, raise a family on a ranch, or you live in the city, you know, have one of those tiny houses, whatever it is, right. You know, we all are, I think our dreams are put into our heart because they're meant to be. And I think if you just start there, I think that's the first step. If it's meant to be, then what is it that I could do to start to kind of just erase, just chip away, just little by little, you know, the experiences that we've had cause these beliefs. That doesn't mean that they're true. And our past does not determine our future. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Or it can.
Right. It doesn't.
We don't want it to. We want to create a better one.
Exactly.
We don't want that. We don't want that.
No, we do not. Karen, thank you so much for being my guest today. I absolutely adore you. And you are just such a ray of sunshine. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with our listeners today.
I adore you too. Thank you so much. I'm so happy we connected.
Me too. So much so. And everybody tuning in, thank you so much for joining Karen and I today. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I always strive to ensure that everybody who tunes in walks away with some nugget of information that helps them to navigate wherever it is that they are in their process. Sending you all tons of love, light, and joy as always. Mwah. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorced Woman's Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, please share this episode with someone you know or spread the word on social media. This is how I reach more divorcees around the world and provide them with the support they need to create their next best life. And I would also love to continue the conversation with you. So please friend me on Facebook, join my private Facebook group, The Divorce Rehab, and follow me on Instagram @DivorceRehab with Wendy. I'll see you next time.